This is the Hip Hour Podcast, released May 1st, 2022. Episode 587, Biblical Broker Bucks.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Chippageddon's over.
Who is it? Well, what's the opposite of bubblegum tap shoes?
I don't know. We'll have to invent something.
How about...
I put him on the spot.
How about mouthwash sandals?
Good enough. I have no idea what that means, but yep.
I was just thinking of what's the opposite of tap shoes and what's the opposite of bubblegum.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
All right, so anyways, how's it over?
It's over because those Keysight winners, the Scope winners from last year, 12 months ago that I did, they finally got their, one of them finally got their Scope and one finally got their Waveform Gen 12 months later.
Yeah, that's a great measure.
So
great measure.
It's over.
Yeah.
I'm calling it.
Yeah. Is that all it takes, huh?
That's all it takes is for Keysight to ship.
Okay. I'm probably not gonna agree wholeheartedly, you know.
No, I know. Yeah, no, it's definitely not over. It's probably only just begun, unfortunately. Yeah. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
I was actually just watching Phil and Lamore from Adafruit made a video where they're basically talking to the camera saying, "Microchip, we need a reel of parts so that we can ship educational boards."
I thought Microchip were one of the ones who weren't like the least affected. There was somebody put up a graphic on Twitter a couple of months back.
I think that was Jay Carlson who did that.
Right. Yeah. And like,
yeah, but
and
that was, that was based on stock. That was, yeah, that was an interesting chart. I think it was Jay, maybe it was someone else. It was an interesting chart because it was basically like scraping DigiKey and saying like, what's there?
Yes, right.
And then I think they collated it by which vendor it was. And I think you're right. It was Microchip had the most stuff.
Microchip were by far the standout. That had the most stuff.
But it doesn't really matter.
I know
what I mean? Like,
it only takes one part for you not to get.
It only takes one letter of one part. That's what
I know,
I'm finding.
Exactly.
Like, so one part that I'm waiting on until apparently March of 2023, it's like, you know, the family is there, but one letter change and it's like, okay, now you're at half the memory. You've got half the peripherals that I'm already using. It's a different package. So I'm already figuring out how to do a, you know, layout change. That's fine. But like some of it is like, I'd have to rewrite all the code too and refactor like the system diagram. It's like, okay, so that, what do you do at that point? You know, it's just like, well, I might as well optimize for the best part at the instant that I start that redesign then. And I better also have those parts in hand. You know, like that's pretty much the only way forward for me.
Which part are Adafruit? I didn't think they used any Microchip. I thought they were all like STM.
Remember who they bought. Huh? They bought Atmel.
Oh, okay. Of course. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. So we're not talking about PIC parts. We're talking about Atmel.
No, yeah. These are SAMD 2151. Right. Okay. Yeah. And that's what Adafruit, you know, SAMD, I did some research on those parts at one point. I didn't realize they were actually automotive parts. And I think that's why I think that's why Lamore favors them is because there's a DAC on board. And, you know, the peripherals are very ruggedized, stuff like that. Makes sense for people that are, you know, going to potentially blow stuff up. And also they have a lot of memory, stuff like that. They're not particularly cheap. You know, if you go and like buy them.
Oh, no, twosies, no, definitely.
They're not particularly cheap, but they're nice parts. And, you know, part of a much, much broader line, but they focus down to just those two parts and honestly popularize them with things like CircuitPython and some of the Arduino support they did.
Yep.
So yeah. And now that's the video they made. I'll link the video and it's pretty funny.
What they were, I can see the sad look. I can see the sad puppy look on their face and just why have you done this?
So have
it?
We all, right? I mean, like
yeah, I know.
I think at least they have a platform to ask, right? I mean, what am I going to do? What do you know, like,
well,
we could, I think it's, you know, it just comes down to money and dollars and cents and I don't know, and size. Like if you're not a huge company, even if you are a huge company, like what the hell are people doing? I would love to hear, you know, if people have thoughts or experiences about what their companies are doing about like actually impacting change in this case. I just don't know what people are doing other than paying out the ass for broker parts. Like,
yeah, I know,
that's
exactly.
It's all I can think. Like, brokers are making so much money. They, you know, they're biblically, you know, they're making biblical bucks.
Biblical levels of profit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Profiteering. Yeah.
Anyway, yes, the lack of parts. Factory 400 on Twitter. Definitely worth a follow, by the way. Factory 400.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tweeted yesterday. I retweeted it, that his quad pick and place machine. He's got a real kick-ass quad pick and place machine, like real serious bit of kit. He says he can't get components anymore, and he needs the space, so he's packing up his pick and place machine and putting it into mothballs. So, like, yeah, because
I hate to see that.
I know. And he needs the space, and he's like, he's not using it anyway because he can't get the bloody parts. So into the mothballs it goes. It's like, and I tweeted, like, what happens to a pick and place machine when you don't use it? Is it one of those things that you have to like keep it like a car? Oil. You've got to keep it running. Yeah. You know, you've got to keep it lubricated. You've got to keep it, you know, because there's so many mechanical.
Did your parents ever used to say they needed to take it out on the highway to
and
blow
then
they
the need
carbon
to take
out?
It out on the.
Do you know? I think you did a little bit, and I used to listen to Car Talk all the time, and they had a thing about it at one point. But it is a thing, but only with cars with carburetors. And even then, they're like, you know, they have all a bunch of stuff about it. But blow the carbon
it's
out. I remember.
Not really, a
I remember
thing,
that. Right? Yeah, yeah. Nothing in my lifetime, at least. You know, like
right,
I don't.
Yeah,
my parents probably
hasn't
had
been
like
a thing for
one
40,
or two
50 years.
Yeah. Carburetor cars. Yeah, they didn't collect cars or anything like that. Right. It was just like. Everything was fuel injected. So, just think, Dave, you know, like your kids are going to be like, you know, you have an electric car already. I'm hoping my next car is electric. It's like the concept of like, oh, I need to take this car on the highway to blow the contaminants that come from the propellant. You know, it's just like, wow.
Well, no, you might get the equivalent in the batteries, you know, those little dendrites growing, you know, you have to like burn out those little dendrites.
Yeah, yeah. I saw
you. I was just thinking.
You charge your
day.
Thing all the way 100%.
Yeah,
I saw on
just,
Twitter.
That's what I was about to say. I was just thinking this the other day because I rarely charge my car to 100% because it's not good for the battery life. But we went on a big trip that was going to be borderline, you know. So we charged it to 100% just in case. And I thought like because I always charge it 80%. And I went, well, what happens to the rest of the, you know, is it like I don't think it's like a how does it work in like I don't think it works. Like that inside. Like, I think it's just. It's
see what
like,
happens here is we're shoving so many electrons in here. The electrons, they
and,
just start
yeah,
running
they all
into
fall
each
to
other.
Bottom, and they all fall
and they, yeah,
and they
get
all
really angry,
at the bottom.
You know, it's. You know, have you ever been on a really like packed airplane before? It's like that for the electrons.
oh, boy. So, I was thinking that. And it's like, well, no, because that's not really how. The battery works. It's not like, you know, like there's like the physical top 20% of it, like just doesn't get used. It's not quite.
Yeah, that's the bad part. You gotta just skip the bad part, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But it certainly does shorten the life, you know, if you charge them all the way up continuously and repeatedly. So yeah, only keep mine charged to 80%. But if anyone knows if your pick and place machine or your EV battery for that matter, needs to be run in. Anyway, he said he was going to keep it in a location where he could actually run it twice a month, where he could just start it up and just, you know, have the motors whir around and, you know, just to keep it going. So he has thought of that.
Does one with the pick and place machine, do you need to like oil it?
I guess
I know very little about machinery.
I know. Well, I think once they get bigger and more complicated, probably, because they've got all these linear drive things and they've got, you know, like, I don't think, you know, it'd be a bad idea if you left it, like, uncovered or left it in some environment that wasn't, you know, good for it and, like, got dust all over it and stuff like that. That'd really screw it up, you know, if you got dust in it or something like that over time. If it was like a barn find, you know, it was a barn find pick and place machine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's all those American picker shows. Do you hear about those shows?
I think we had that as a thumbnail. Yeah, yeah, I love those shows.
You do? Really?
We had
that. Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I love
junk
pickers.
TV, man.
Yeah,
junk
I know. TV. It's great. Oh, compulsive viewing.
Is this because you're like, so you're like watching these shows and you're watching people like buy storage units and you're like, tapping your fingers together excitedly. And you're I could buy that storage unit and put it in my storage unit.
Yeah, right. No, I don't like the storage unit shows. Pickers. Okay. I do like American Pickers because the guys in it.
What's the difference? I don't know the difference.
Oh, right. Where the Pickers show, they own a second hand company, one of those pawn shop kind of thing, they own like a second hand trading stop, and they just go around in a van and they find people who are advertising that, we need to clear out our entire house. And they go in their attic and they, crawl through their attic space searching for all these gems, or their barn or something like that.
So this is like your voyeuristic watching of other people going into the equivalent of the dumpster room.
You go into other people's houses and barns and, and things like that.
Dave's interests are varied, but they rhyme.
Yep. Well, and whereas the storage unit ones, they're highly produced, highly overproduced, let's say, and not that genuine, let's say that. There's a lot of
I expect
stuff
my reality TV to be extremely reality.
You're right. But the Pickers one, like, you can't fake that. It's like somebody has, their land is just filled with like 200 old abandoned cars. Right, it's like, that's
and then at the very back they go, oh wow, we've never seen this before. It's such a rare find.
Yeah,
it's a quad pick and place machine.
It's a quad pick and place machine. Anyway, didn't we have?
I think
we did that as a thumbnail, didn't we? On an old episode, we had a barn find pick and place machine. I'm sure we did.
Oh God, Dave, 587. That's today's show. 587.
Right. Anyway.
Yeah.
Rings a bell, but barn find pick and place machine. I take it it's not going to work that well.
I would not probably. Yeah, I think we definitely talked to people on the show at some point. If not on the show, then definitely I've talked to people in real life about like buying used pick and place machines because that's a common thing. I don't know, man. People are still doing it. They're still buying pick and place machines and thinking they're, you got to make a business out of it after the fact. Don't forget that, folks.
Oh, right.
Everybody thinks it's a great idea until you're like, oh. Now I'm done making my boards. What about, I guess I have to make other people's boards to keep the price down on this thing. Hey.
All right. Yeah. There's a link in here from Prism Tank 32 about PCB fabs. What's all this about?
This was just kind of a request, I think, based on they wanted to buy something. They didn't say domestic specifically, but there was stuff. I should probably actually have this link up. I'm doing it by memory.
Oh, they're after a PCB house.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Okay.
I think I still almost universally point people at PCB Shopper.
Right.
I think that's a good one.
Yep.
Do you use anything else?
Which is one that gets you prices from all different places. Yes, that's one of the places I'd go with. But really, they're all so equivalent, especially if you're just a real simple, a small, simple board that easily fits on a panel. I wouldn't even bother shopping around. I'd just get it from whoever I used last time. But, maybe if I had a bigger board that does, it's got some, more obscure stuff that may not be that cheap on a panel or it's larger or something like that, you'd definitely shop around for price.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
But, who cares if it costs $1 a board or $2 a board? It's like,
Yeah. So they're also asking about assembly and, doing assembly.
Right.
That's
different.
This is the one thing they don't mention is cost. I don't believe. Yeah, I'd say cost is going to be the big one. And then also delivery time. And, you could get in the U.S. at least, could find probably two or three hands off assembly houses, digital hands off assembly houses. And you could pay through the nose for it. And you could probably get it in less than a week, assuming your parts are available.
Yep.
But that's going to cost you a ton of money, ton of money compared to what you probably think it is.
Yeah, totally.
And I've used some of them and they're great.
Did the China shut down? Did the China COOF zero policy shut down affect? I haven't been keeping up to date.
I will say,
presumably it would have, but I've heard people have been getting shipments. I'm going, well, how? Isn't China supposed to be literally in lockdown? All of it? All of Shenzhen was in lockdown at one point a couple of weeks
back. That's right. Yep. I have not been ordering boards lately, to my great shame. And I asked a friend about this, and he said basically his stuff was about a week or two delayed, but it was still getting out from Shenzhen. So
Wow. I just find that absolutely remarkable.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, best case scenario, given, you know, like, you know, yeah, because it could have gone the exact opposite way. It could have been like, well, yeah, I'm still waiting to hear.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a big interconnected world. We're all kind of affected by world events like this. And yeah, I think it's just, I think you always have to be kind of like ready for a plan B in that case. You know, like, what is your risk tolerance for, you know, people probably don't think this at the time, but like, as soon as you hear, so say you sent out a board on a Monday and Shenzhen said, announces everything's locked down for the next week to month on Tuesday. Yeah. I think on that Tuesday, you need to ask yourself, like, what is my real deadline on boards in-house? My cost tolerance, my, you know, like, if it's like a, well, I don't care about it, you just let it go. You just say, all right, it gets here when it gets here. But like, if you're like, no, I need this by 1 month from today, and I also need to assemble it by hand, it's like, okay, well, you got to go make some calculations based on that and probably pony up to work around it.
Now, do you believe this news story? People were sending this to me, and I going, Dave, is this real? It's like, tech firms rip apart new washing machines so they can harvest their computer parts in a bid to beat the global chipageddon shortage. I'm smelling a bit of a over-exaggeration here, perhaps. But I can imagine scenarios where if you're a high value-added company, right, like a, you know, like you make small volumes of stuff and you absolutely need these chips and you make massive margins on, I can under, like, and there happens to be a chip in a washing machine, like the huge big washing machine, right, that you can't get anywhere else, and it happens to be inside these new washing machines. I can imagine actually buying a couple and tearing the chips out, but geez, I mean, I don't know if this is real. I don't know if this is actually. Yeah,
I think the externalities of buying a washing machine and throwing out the parts you don't need is significantly lower than it should be. You know, you just pay to throw it away, right? I mean, like, that's pretty bad.
But yeah, I can't see how that's really real. I'm just not.
They said we were going to buy 10. Let's see, this is a hearsay, but they said we're going to buy 10,000 washing machines and take the sensors out of them. What are we going to do with leftover appliances? Let's do that tomorrow.
Which sensors are they talking about?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think this has been handed down.
Pretty apocryphal. I don't doubt that people are doing this with dev boards.
I've heard it's happening with dev boards. Yeah.
Yeah.
I desperately need one chip and it's on a dev board. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. People are doing crazy stuff right now. I will say
I know.
Is it any better or worse?
I'd say it's possible, but I don't think it's actually real. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that the ripple effect from any of these decisions, you know, like, I think about, like, okay, so going back to my, you know, designing in a part that's in the same family, but a different part, right? So I now go and I say, okay, you know what? I think I can buy the half memory part that I have never bought before, but happens to be in stock. And I need 1,000 of these parts. And I see there's 1,000 in the ecosystem. And I say, you know what? I think I can squeeze it down into that firmware, the firmware image into that thing. And I think I can make it all work. And I go and I buy 1,000 parts because I'm going to do that. Well, someone else was depending on that 1,000 parts being there, maybe to buy one, maybe to buy 100, or maybe to buy all 1,000. And like, and then they have to do that. And it just ripples on and on and on down the line. And so that's, you know, we're going to be part of this ping pong, I think, for, you know, probably months even past when the chips start flowing in. So also, this Daily Mail is a terrible site. This is like a...
it's one of those rags. You know, it's one of those.
It really seems like it.
Yeah, but anyway, so, that's where the article...
Clickbait. I'm claiming clickbait.
Yeah, it's just plastered with so many ads and those stupid pop-ups, you know, those viral stories.
I was thinking like the celebrity stories is really...
They're all those celebrity stories down the side and at the bottom and stuff. It's just absolutely choked with them. I mean, it's quite horrific, actually, how much crap is on there. But anyway, that's where the story happens to be. So I'm just, calling. Yeah, kind of BS on
that
one.
What do you think? I mean, what's the craziest thing you had to do for a chip in the past? Like, I mean, it's not like you were designing electronics during this time, but I'm sure that there's been shortage situations.
When I was a boy, I've still got chips here that I desoldered from boards when I was like 10. Though. You know, and I was using them.
Access.
Yeah, that was access. Just, you know. But
also, you should sell those chips. They're probably worth a lot now, Dave.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that CD4001 from, you know, 1980 is really valuable now. Oh boy. Anyway. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, you should see. I mean, there's no real open market. I remember the guys that did Earl and Machina. Machina is a, they did like car computers and stuff like that. They've been on the show before. Machina with two C's. And they have, I think it was Josh. It's Earl and Josh, I believe. They have a site that they started basically that was meant to be kind of a exchange for parts. You know, like, a, hey, oh, I've got a thousand parts.
Right.
Can I sell them to people?
So it's an online community broker.
Yeah,
system.
Yeah, like a community. It's like a eBay for parts, but somehow verified. I don't remember what it was.
Let's see. Somehow verified?
Yeah, yeah, but I think it was more like
you're buying a reel from Joe Blogs on the internet. I don't think that's hard to it's hard to verify. Where did Joe Blogs get it from? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing. Like, you know, that's always the problem. It's always a trust problem, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You could take a photo. Like, okay, so for example, I'm on. It's called XS Components. We've probably mentioned on the show before. And you know, you go on their site. Let me send Dave the link real quick so he has.
I've got it. This. Yeah.
Okay, you got it.
Well, unless you got a specific part. Yeah.
No, no, no. I'm just looking on the front page of it. And it's like, all right, so there's STM32F098RCT6.
Yep, I see it.
Holy crap. That's a Cortex M0 part that they're selling for $7.90 each.
Yep.
Whoo.
Well, they've only got 103 in stock.
Yeah, but you know what? If you're missing, if you don't have that.
Yeah, if you don't, if you need 100
of them.
There's
no way that was more than a $2 part. Man, that's crazy. This is like strange voyeurism like it is now, too. It's just like, ooh, can I get any deals?
Actually, I don't think they're scalping too much there at all at $7.90.
For Cortex M part?
I think that's probably a fair price in the current market. I'd be snapping those
I'm
up.
I am sure that these are matching, you know, might be slightly elevated above like a DigiKey price or whatever. Maybe not DigiKey. Probably significantly above a DigiKey, but like, you know, probably lower than just a general broker that might be able to get you 10,000 of these parts. But
well,
still.
Hang on, I'm sorting by price. The most expensive part is $1,500, and they've got six in stock. What the heck is that?
Oh, that's going to be like FPGA, right?
Hang on, $509 AU Optronics. No, give me something that I've actually heard of. Give me like an Intel. No. Okay, they've got an STM32F779 at $110 each.
Okay.
They've got 2,900 of those bad boys in stock, and they show real photos of them.
Yeah, I think that actually does help to, you know, like you could fake that, but it does help a little bit.
Oh, and they've got like the bag seal dates and how many are in the bags, and they've got photos of the individual medically sealed bags. This really helps with the confidence side of things. Yeah, definitely.
It does. I feel like I feel like we're giving, like, you know, however many listeners we have, like a little bit of hope. And I want to just squash it right now. There's almost 0% chance they have the parts you need, just so you know.
Yeah,
right?
They have exactly.
200 pages with like five pages.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah,
the
there's
odds
not
is
many
not
parts
there.
Here.
No,
yeah,
no, there's not.
This is not the answer for you. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. However, you know, still kind of fun to look through.
Right. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, this is always a trust problem, right? I mean, this is the point of like centralization in the chips industry anyways, right? It's like, I trust DigiKey, Mouser.
Yes, of course.
Maybe
because
newer,
they're a tier one supplier. They're like,
exactly.
You know, they get their parts directly from the manufacturer, and that's they're right. certified, yep. You know,
right.
Like,
and I don't trust a marketplace.
No.
And DigiKey.
eBay.
Yeah.
Alibaba, AliExpress.
Yeah. I mean, even like LCSC, right? I mean, like, I trust them as a marketplace versus like a going direct to some of the, you know, some of the lesser known names that they carry, right? That just there is a market. This is like what do they call it? Like the diamond district effect.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. So the diamond district is a section of New York. And you'd think, like, well, if you had a diamond store, wouldn't you want to be, like, completely separate so that you stand apart, right? You, like, hey, I'm a diamond store, but I have all these beautiful wares, and I don't have anything to compare them to. But there's, like, an effect where there's actually a benefit from all the diamond stores being in one district.
In one there, you appear reputable because you're around other reputable companies.
There is that, but actually it's also the like comparison shopping as well. I think it's just like the marketplace actually increases the overall value. Even though you get comparison shop, there are there's like some weird economic effect. I'll probably just copy and paste the link that I find, to be honest, if I'm being honest here. But it's an interesting read.
Although a pro tip, shh, don't tell the secret, but diamonds aren't actually worth anything. Shh, just, you know, just putting it out there. Don't spread it too far.
Okay.
Anyway, all right. Yeah. Speaking of bullshit, which is diamond prices.
Seriously,
try and go sell a diamond. You'll find out how much they're really worth. Okay.
Okay, Dave, you and Reddit all agree on the same things here. We get it, buddy.
My father-in-law's a jeweler. He makes top-notch. Really? He's one of the top jewelers in the country. Makes the jewelry for all the top-notch, you know, names.
All the Aussie football stars.
Right.
All the teeth that got knocked out by the Aussie football players and the
all those fancy pantsy ones you see in the wedding magazines and stuff like that. He's made all those, you know. So
fancy.
Anyway. So I know a thing or two. Anyway.
Oh yeah. I'm sure you know a thing or two.
Right. Speaking of bullshit.
Dave heard about it over a potato salad at a family dinner.
No. Seriously, go and try and sell a diamond. Anyway, speaking of bullshit. Somebody put this on the thing. Who put it on here? Timmy time. Timmy time. You'll know all about that soon, Chris. Timmy time. No, you don't know about it yet?
I don't know that reference.
Timmy time.
Being a father? Is this?
It's a cartoon thing. It's a kid's, yep.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no,
It's Timmy. Yeah, Timmy time.
Anyway. I'm going to be thrust into the world of...
Yes.
Terribly annoying cartoons.
And terribly annoying.
I'm already in the Pixar world, but by choice, but the everyday cartoons.
The best is Bluey. I'm not biased because it's Australian, but the best, the highest quality children's cartoon is Bluey.
Got it.
It is awesome.
Got it.
I've heard that even all these Americans are now speaking with Australian accent.
We have covered a lot of ground in this episode already. You can tell we haven't talked in a couple weeks because we are all over the place, man.
Oh, man. Just wait until what I've got next.
Okay.
Anyway, Bluey. Apparently, all the Yankee kids are now speaking with Aussie accents because of Bluey. So, sorry.
Bluey. Is this like a Bluey?
Oh, my God. You haven't heard of Bluey. Oh, my God. Bluey's the best.
All right. You know what?
All right. Bluey's the best.
It's because he's an Australian blue healer, right? That's the idea.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, it's not a he.
Oh, sorry.
Bluey's actually a she. A lot of people are surprised to learn this. Yep.
I also used to have a blue healer, an Australian Shepherd blue healer.
Really?
That was a she as well. Yeah. Her name was Lola. You probably heard her on very early recordings of the Amp Hour.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I bet I could go back and find Lola. Lola always managed to sneak into.
Right.
All of my dogs have always snuck into the Amp Hour at one point or another. So.
Anyway, Bluey is the best.
Okay, Bluey. Yep.
Trust me.
Great.
Yeah.
I will go check it out.
Noted. All right. It's really good for adults too. Like it's like some of them are going, oh God, not another bloody Octonauts episode. You know.
I'm just imagining, folks. I know we're already past April 20th, but I'm just imagining Dave smoking a huge doobie and being like, man, you got to go see Bluey.
It's deep, man.
Jerry Garcia. Funyuns. Lots of Funyuns. All right. What are we really talking about here?
I'm just saying it may or may not be Australian government propaganda to infiltrate the US market.
Right.
It is.
Right.
I'm not saying it's a conspiracy or anything, but it is actually backed by the Australian government. If you actually go look, who funded it? Secretly funded by the Australian government. So I'm just putting that out.
What would be the impact of a bunch of American kids speaking with Australian accents?
I don't know, but it's good.
You know what it does, Dave? It's accent inflation. You know, accent like all inflation. The people. You know, all the like the medium good looking Aussies that come to the US, and all these you know, people over here, they just swoon and like, oh, yeah, I love your accent. You know what?
Doesn't matter
anymore. Doesn't matter. The kids talk like that too. You know what? That's annoying now. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. All right. Yeah. It dilutes it.
It dilutes it. That's right. Inflation. Mm. We're living in an inflationary age, and Bluey is part of the problem.
All right.
Now I sound like I've been smoking pot. What are we talking about for real, other than Bluey?
We're back onto bullshit.
Yeah.
Somebody posted this on the Reddit, so it's not just me doing it. Somebody posted it. They wanted it. Got a couple of thumbs up, I think. Two thumbs up, so there you go. Talk about it. It isn't a thumbs up on Reddit, is it? It's an arrow up.
An upvote.
Upvote. Anyway, Belkin Belkin's a big name, you know, they make all sorts of
quite big. Yeah.
Computery type stuff. They've partnered with WeCharge.
Okay.
Yes, wireless power. And I will, of course, link in my video.
There's debunk involved here. Okay.
1092 WeCharge IR wireless charge, in fact or fiction. So I have done a video on that, and I will send you the link. There it is there. So yeah, WeCharge. This is infrared wireless charging. So this is directed infrared wireless charging. So it doesn't just shoot it out. It figures out where it is and then shoots an infrared laser. I think it's an infrared laser. Jeez, it's been so long since the video.
Mm.
And yes, it's an infrared laser. So it's Linus from Linus Tech Tips. We've also got another thing on him today on the list. And so we can segue into that later, Chris. Just a professional heads up there.
Okay. Thanks.
Anyway, he did a video on this, like sprouting how wonderful it is, and they sent in the train demo, like this train runs around the track, and then he puts the infrared wireless transmitter on the ceiling, and it follows the train around, and it shoots an infrared laser beam to it, and it powers the train. It's like, whoop-de-doo. Yeah, so like it's an open cavity. I think the principle is open cavity laser. The way it works is that, like, normally a laser itself is a closed cavity, but in this particular case, this was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That half of the cavity is up in the transmitter and the other half is down in the receiver. And so it forms, like, so the path forms the laser cavity. So you have to understand how lasers work and bounce back and forth and, you know, stuff like that. So apparently that's how they make it safe, in quote marks. But yeah, nah, is the official, I believe, is my verdict on that.
Yeah, and I think I would be on that. I mean, anything with, wireless power works, colon.
Anyway, so.
Who cares?
Yeah,
not enough to care, right?
No, exactly. All these things work, right? U-beam works. Solar roadways works, right? They all work, right?
Yep. They prove the demo that they were trying to prove. They don't prove the commercial capability. Yeah, so it's.
So what's happened here, I think, even though I haven't read into the details, is that WeCharge have obviously convinced Belkin that, you know, or maybe I, you know, they've gave them, like, you know, convinced them somehow to do a press release that they're teaming up somehow, and Belkin are just looking into it. Like, you won't find a WeCharge wireless charger on your Belkin branded WeCharger thing on your shelf anytime soon or ever. Really, because it's not practical.
Yeah.
I just always
imagine, like, you know, some entrepreneur type stuff person, like, getting a press release and then like just flogging the hell out of it and then getting it, you know, to places like The Verge and like stirring up all this crap.
It is the staple. The press release is the staple of all. In fact, I've done a video. It was an hour long, and I didn't release it. Well, I sort of released it to my backers, but I thought it was way too long. Anyway, it was a follow-up.
You too could be a Dave Insider.
Just join my Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to redo it because it was like 55-minute video. I can link it in, actually.
Oh.
And and it was just like, they've another wireless power bloody company. They just use the press release thing.
Yeah, I
right?
think
this is
yeah.
the wiggle.
They're sensationalizing and going for the, the quick hits. Yep. You know, like that's
They're like, we're partnering up with this company, you know, and it's like this company is just going, oh yeah, we'll kind of talk to you, like, and see what you got. But like, and then boom, that company plasters it all over. Yeah, we've got a deal with, you know, Belkin, and you know, it's just grown.
Well, one thing that the comment down at the bottom of this Verge article mentions is just like the low power sensors and stuff like that. And that is actually something I wanted to talk about this week. How about that? Okay. Unexpected segue. They mentioned Thread and Matter. I got invited to speak at the Thread Group's like member meeting.
Thread? What?
Thread. Yeah, this is what I mentioned at the end of the show 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I said, Dave, this is this thing that I'm working on, and it's so cool. It's Thread. And you're like, uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And right. Then the show ended.
Yeah,
and,
right. okay. Yeah, that really stuck in my mind.
Yeah, I know. The reason I wanted to talk about it, because what it really was for me is a call. It actually was a callback to how naive I was. I mean, I'm still very naive. Don't get me wrong. So I made this ABC board, right? Do you remember me talking about that probably nonstop when I was making it, right? And so that had an NRF52840 on it, which is normally like a Bluetooth chip, but it can do other types of 2.4 gigahertz radios. Mm-hmm. And it had a cell modem on it, and it was meant to plug into a Raspberry Pi. And that was kind of the idea. And I was just making it because I was making it as like a reference design and just as like something I could show off in a portfolio and, you know, something I could do the course around. You know, from that perspective, I think I did okay. Like I showcased what I wanted to showcase on the build side. But from like a product design piece, I left it completely half-assed because what I had basically said, and this is, you know, coming at it from like a hardware only perspective, was like, well, I'll figure out the software later. You know, like, right. I know Bluetooth's a thing. I know that cellular's a thing. I had worked on some cellular stuff in the past. I thought I could get this thing started up. This is actually how I started looking at Zephyr and all these other things. And like, I was like, I think I could figure it out. And you know, truthfully, I could have if I kept going on it, but I really didn't have like any concept of how I would extend this thing, right? So it's got a Bluetooth radio on there, but really point-to-point Bluetooth like that wouldn't have been the right option, right?
Okay.
And I was always saying like, oh, I'd have like sensors that could talk back to this Bluetooth thing, but it doesn't really make any sense. Well, since that time, I've learned a lot more about IoT, much to Dave's chagrin, and other things in the space. And what I'm really saying, though, is, you know, looking at all the different things that are out there, Thread is one thing that actually would have enabled that platform, right? So I wanted to have a cellular black hole sending stuff to the internet. I wanted to talk to a bunch of low power sensors. That's why I put this NRF52840 on the board and also to like process things. And Thread is basically like a meshing protocol built on top of 802.15.4. Sorry, it's not a meshing protocol. It's a meshing setup on top of a 802.15.4 protocol, which is like how the radios talk to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all at 2.4 gigahertz. And so, yeah, it kind of just kind of tied all that stuff back together. I got back into it for unrelated reasons. But now that I've seen it, it's pretty damn cool. And I actually have things on my desk actually meshed together as we speak. I don't know if you can hear them, but they are meshing, Dave.
I'm a chip whisperer. I can hear them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think the thing that I'm excited about is I'm going to try and like extend a network to actually have like a bunch of small sensors. And so this, like, to tie it all back, the Verge article at the bottom, someone's talking about low power sensors. These are legitimately like low power, not saying what I'm doing here, but like some of the things that are coming out now and some of the Thread stuff and then Matter's built on top of that. These are like really, really low power devices that actually are like around your home that might be like a, I guess a smart button could be one thing or like light bulbs or whatever, but they could all be meshed together using Thread, and then Matter is like a software layer that's on top of that. And that's kind of the thing that people are going to hear about a lot in the consumer world specifically.
Right.
I've been doing a lot of talking.
I do not want a low power smart button. No, thank you. I do not want a low power meshed smart button in my
home. I do not want it in my house. I do not want it with a mouse. I will not take your IoT box. I will not have it with a fox. I will not have it on Sigfox.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I do not want your stuff from Apple. I think it happens to be Crapple. Take that, Theodore Seussel.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyways, right. I'm really excited about it. I think, you know, from an industrial perspective, it's probably not going to be super huge in an industrial because, you know, there's meshing protocols that are out there. There's like Linear Tech, now Analog Devices, had bought this thing called Smart Dust or Dust Networks or something like that.
Right.
A couple, 10 years ago, I think at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's been, meshing is not a new thing. It is increasingly in the zeitgeist, at least in my zeitgeist. That's not how zeitgeist works. And I think what people are going to hear a lot about is Matter, and that's built on top of Thread. And that's some of the people I got to talk to and go present in front of and got some stuff working. And I think for people that are looking to do low power projects for themselves or for clients and stuff like that, I think actually Thread might make sense in that case.
Got it. So, well, cool. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. It's a the way that I'm kind of telling people about it, it's kind of like if you had a Bluetooth device, but if it had an IP address.
Right.
Which is kind of crazy, right? You think about, most people don't think about having like a, so if you had like a, you know, do you have a smartwatch or do you
nope,
do fitness trackers?
No, I hate smartwatches. Okay. With a passion.
I just thought, you know, you're so into fitness that maybe you broke down a little bit.
Nope. Okay. Well, the thing that bugs me.
Tell me what bugs you.
You go into the gym. Right? Really pisses me off. You go into the gym.
Dave goes to the gym a lot. If people are listening and they don't know, Dave is a gym rat, like very fit Dave. So he knows gyms.
I do.
Yeah.
Technically, I'm a qualified gym instructor. So,
oh, interesting. Yeah.
Anyway,
you should start a cross promotional platform.
Right. Yeah.
Getting EEs in shape.
Yep.
Harder challenge has never been.
Well,
attempted.
I have actually done a video on this. I've done lab workouts.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying you actually have to get people motivated to,
I know, to
replicate it.
Right. boy. Anyway.
You and I have been talking for 12 years. Hasn't worked on me yet.
There's no hope.
No, there's really not.
Anyway, what was I saying? A thing I hate, right? You go to the freaking gym. People like, oh my God, is it too much to ask to leave your shoe phone in the locker? They're sitting in the class. I'm the only one standing there without a phone. Everyone else is just sitting there and just scrolling like seconds before the class starts.
Mm. You know, some of that, Dave,
what is wrong with
social anxiety. I don't know if you know that.
Oh my God.
The phone is a crutch for social anxiety. So you're just so comfortable in your own skin. What you should really do is walk up to them and make them very uncomfortable. Be like, hello, I would like to start a conversation
with you. With you. Yes. Yeah, I'll walk up to every girl in the class and say, I would like to start a conversation with you.
Well, they'll be creepy, but you know, like.
Yeah. Oh my God. And then during the track, you know, they're like, okay, let's take a 30-second rest. Boom, on the phone.
I know, Dave. This is more of a kids these days thing. This is a. And not just kids.
Who
are we kidding?
Adults.
Who are we kidding? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was referring to 25-year-olds as kids, just so you know.
Well, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, you're getting old now. Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, if you were to have a wrist computer, you know, Bluetooth stuff, you're just almost always talking back to your phone, and there is usually not a publicly addressable IP address on that thing because there's nothing forwarding packets along you.
Yeah.
If you're talking to it from the internet, you're talking to the phone, and then the phone says, oh, I can translate this down to wrist compatible stuff over Bluetooth. You know, there's Bluetooth, what's it called? It like broadcasts and advertises services and whatever. So,
right.
So yeah, it's a little different like that.
And groovy.
Cool. I think it is groovy. Dave.
Groovy, baby.
I'm going to say it. IoT is kind of cool sometimes, man.
Yeah, okay.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. It's delicious.
Can we talk about Bob Weidler, please?
Sure. The opposite of IoT, Bob Weidler.
Anyway, there's an excellent article by Jake Hertz. Love it. Like,
come on.
If you're a columnist on All About Circuits, your name needs to be Jake Hertz.
If you're a wrestler, you know?
Right, and what would be your wrestling name? Well,
Mine would be the...
Dr. Diode or something, I don't know.
How about like the bomb dropper, but it's B-O-M.
Oh, the bomb, right. No, that can be your finishing move, the bomb.
Oh, yeah.
The bomb drop or something.
Yeah.
The parts bomb is your finishing maneuver.
The parts bomb. There's a lot of silly jokes in there. What about yours?
I think I'll start after this. I don't know. I'll start a thread on Twitter. How about that?
Okay, I like it.
What would your wrestling name be? And it's got to be electronics related. You know?
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you have to have like an associated like.
Yeah, you have to have a finishing move. And what would your finishing move be?
Oh, yeah, finishing move. But I was thinking actually more like the Mexican wrestlers that have like the face mask.
Oh, yeah.
What are they called? I forget what they're called.
Lucha Libre.
Luchadors, yeah.
Yep.
Lucha Libre. Yeah. 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 It's gotta like be matching for that sort of thing. So if like you're the bomb dropper, you have to have like a spreadsheet on your face.
Oh, as a mask. Right.
As a mask. Yeah. 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 Like printed on fabric. You don't have to wear.
Yeah. Of course. Paper. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
I would have like a 555 printed on my.
There you go. Yeah.
Or maybe a Weidler current source, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. The Weidlerizer. Yeah.
Anyway, because I just coincidentally posted a photo on Twitter yesterday because I got one in the mailbag. Thank you to the person who sent it to me. Is a PCB with his face on it and like it's a plaque kind of thing. It's awesome. So I'll have to link that one in. It's a great.
Oh.
Yeah,
well, they've done though. A piece of.
Sorry,
I understand what they're doing there, but it like looking at it from far away, like
yeah,
because like it's like exposed. Yeah.
Well, they've only got four colors to work with. For those who don't know, you know, you've got your play. If you get your regular PCB, you've only got four colors in quote marks to work so with. Like, you've got the bare fiberglass. Well,
that's right.
No, yep. Actually, no. Technically, five. No, you've got five colors to work with because
three, four, and then usually not in black solder mask though.
No, I can you've got five. I can tell you how. Okay. Tricks of the trade, my son, my young Padawan.
Uh-huh.
Right. So you've got the fiberglass itself, right? So that's one color, right?
Yep.
Right, and then you've got the copper, bare bare copper.
Copper. Yep. So, usually plated in some way, gold or silver.
Well, yeah, right. So let's just say gold plated. Right?
Gold, yeah, usually gold.
Right. So gold plated. You can have bare copper if you want, but you know. Anyway, but then you've got to do selective plating and stuff like that, and that's that's a different process. Anyway, it's harder. Anyway, so you've got your copper color, whatever that happens to be. Then you've got your solder mask color, and then you've got your silkscreen color. If you only choose one color silkscreen, which is standard, but you can get multiple color silkscreens.
Yeah,
they just put it through multiple processes and
cost
they charge
more.
You.
Yep, just cost more. Yep. Okay, so you're at four.
Would you like eight color solder mask? Ka-ching, 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 ka-ching.
Yeah, right. They like
that.
All right, so give me the fifth one. And remember I said this is black solder mask.
Yep. Okay.
I know what you're going to say. You're going to say it's solder mask over copper or over bare.
No.
But there's no difference here.
I know. It's not that. Okay. You haven't thought of it. Okay. You remember when at the first one I said was fiberglass color. The fiberglass color changes depending upon the copper on the other side. If you have dark copper on the other side or if
that.
You have light copper.
I'll pay that.
See? There you go.
Yeah. There you all go. Right. Now, I would say you would get a sixth color if this wasn't black solder mask. That's
right,
what I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's true. And actually, you can do... I've seen, Badge Life is like all about this kind of.
It's all about those funky looking arty PCBs.
Yeah.
And
you can do like multiple layers as well. Or if you're doing backlit, you can start to do that
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, you can do all sorts of things. And
has done a bunch of great art. You know, that's a PCB art's its own thing.
Yep.
All right.
Totally.
Here's my thing. This is a posterized version of Bob Weidler, right? So this is basically taking Bob Weidler's image and then basically GIMP or GNU image processing or whatever the process or Photoshop basically splits it into four colors.
Yeah.
I think the proper way to do this is stippling.
What's stippling?
Is if you read the Wall Street, have you ever seen like those images in the Wall Street Journal where they take someone's photo and then they just, it looks like it's got different like tones, but it's actually because there's different sized dots. And as
Yep.
I think stippling is the way to go. And that's what the, Zap and Hyron from...
You could do. That'd be an interesting comparison. Yeah. And then you're talking just stippling and not a combination of stippling and the other aspects?
You could do both. You could do both. Right. So you might want to do... So you would want to do
stippling,
you could
have like a gold color dot of any size, and then you can have a black color dot of any size with the...
Yeah, that would be more work,
color.
But... Right. Yeah. I mean, so basically this all comes down to like the image processing you do before you bring it into a program like KiCad. Don't get me wrong. Yep. This is still super cool. Like this is really, this
see,
is a great thing.
That could be a plugin, right? For some clever programmer out there, right? Who wants to convert like images into, you know, you can choose your process. You know, you can choose stippling. You can choose, you know, it'd be great if there's a drop-down box and you can choose, no, I want it as all copper. I want it as, you know, and choose the different methods of doing that. So there are internet points on offer for the first person who comes up with a plugin for KiCad for doing
really
so there
is
good
one
images
for importing already.
Yeah, I've never imported.
SVG.
Right.
That's one. That's the plugin that currently exists. So that's going from, I think, Inkscape to KiCad directly.
Got it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do anything fancy like tonally change.
Yeah,
no,
you have to have the art all ready to go. And really, yeah, you have to kind of, I think really over time, you have to kind of just start to, you have to do it a couple times to be like, oh, actually I could have done this or this. And, you know, look at other people's art too. It's, like I said, it's its own, it's this weird, like, own realm of the art space.
Yeah.
We're like artists, Dave. You know, like, I'm like a PCB artist.
Yep. Yeah. Nice. But, all right. Well, the first person to do that will get a shout out.
Internet points
on the Amp Hour.
From
Wow.
Dave.
Wow. That's worth it.
It's worth a lot. It's worth a lot.
No, you could actually sell it though. Seriously. You could sell. Right. I would buy that plugin. Right?
No, you wouldn't.
Why?
When's the last time you paid for software? Yeah, you pay for some software.
I pay for software all the time.
Mm. When's the last time you used KiCad?
I don't
think you actually would. Come on.
I would pay for it.
I don't think you would.
Why?
All right. Now there's a thing. You could say people could make the software and then they could get a check from Dave and prove me wrong.
I don't understand why you think that I wouldn't pay for software.
I know you do pay for software. I know you do because you use Sony Vegas and stuff like that. And yeah, you're right. I just don't think this is... Have you made any RGB PCBs lately? I mean, like...
No, but if I needed to, I would buy that plugin.
Ah, okay. All right.
No, I wouldn't just buy it if I have no plans to use it.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
But if I wanted to use it, I would go, yes, there is value in that.
Right.
There is value.
To recap, the ways to get mentioned on the Amp Hour.
Like, and I'm not talking hundreds of bucks for it, right?
Yeah, but, you're saying 50 bucks. You'd, 20 bucks.
You'd pay a 10 or a 20 or something, you know. Sure.
Yeah.
Totally. Yep. So there's money to be had there. I think there's money to be had.
The ways to get mentioned on the Amp Hour are two ways. One, make this plugin, which we just came up with.
Right.
Or two, be a cartoon dog that has an Australian accent. That's the other way to get mentioned on the Amp Hour.
Right. Yep. But they're not just a cartoon dog. They're a
Dave. I don't want it. No. No spoilers.
Anthropomorphic. They're an anthropomorphic dog.
No spoilers.
Oh my god. Blue is great. Come on.
I know. I can tell how you feel about Blue.
You're gonna love it. Well, maybe you won't, but you know, I don't know.
It doesn't matter though. You've already.
Yep.
You've already seeded it.
You're right.
Point clear. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about the chip shortage again, and a way around it. Yes, the ESP USB bridge converts ESP32S2 or S3 into a USB to UART chip. One part I cannot find often is the CP2102. Which is what I use for a lot of.
Hang on. So you're saying I can't get this UART RS232 bridge chip, so I'm going to use an even more rare STM32 chip to do it.
No, ESP32.
Oh, ESP32.
ESP32s. I will say, props to Espressif. I mean, I have been seeing a lot of availability for them. Like, I think, I don't know why. Maybe it's just where I'm looking and the types of things I'm looking at.
This is where you'd salvage a chip. This is like, because can't you buy these like things for, like, I've got a dozen of these bloody things lying around, right? If I needed a chip, I would, you know, like, obviously I don't have any volume, but you can buy these for like $2 on AliExpress.
I mean,
or
I can go and buy a USB to serial
converter
on Amazon. Yeah, that's not really the problem. It's more designing it into a product.
Yeah, right.
Also, it's a thing to talk about in the Amp Hour, Dave.
But that's, oh man, imagine if you did that. Right? I mean, how much is an Espressif ESP32? I don't know.
Depends if it's a module or a chip, but I'd say a chip, $1 to $2.
Right. And how much is a UART to RS232? I haven't priced one for a while. 10 cents? 20 cents?
Silicon Labs CP2102, about $3 or $4.
What?
Surprisingly expensive. Yeah, they're
really
expensive.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, well, it depends on the volume. But yeah, I guess I've paid as little as I think, like, I'm usually low volume.
Why would anyone pay that for a UART to?
Because
for a USB to, like, you can get any USB micro and convert it into that, right? Any USB capable. Come on, any USB capable micro can be turned into a USB to UART bridge. Surely.
With software, yeah.
Yeah. So why would you pay a couple of bucks for a bridge chip? I don't get it.
Sometimes they get specced in as other things. All right, here we go. Looking at the completely barren DigiKey CP2102 list. Actually, no, that's not true. There are some here.
Yeah, but these are the ones you can get all those Asian clones of, though.
That's right.
This is how you can get it for $2 delivered.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, surely the chip has to cost 10 cents. Look, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go to LCSC, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yep. What is the cheapest USB UART? How would you search for it?
Yeah, USB. I'd say if you search USB UART.
Interface
okay, so,
ICs.
You know, there's other features in here. Sometimes the other thing is that they get specced in because that's what reference designs have.
Of course. Yeah.
Other interesting thing about the CP2102, because I've used it a bunch and I've also used the EFM8, the part it's based mm-hmm. on, it is an EFM8.
Right.
What? It's the EFM8 UB1 with a ROM. So that's pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of basically exactly what you're saying, you know, any USB capable. I wouldn't agree with any, but like, yeah, I guess any could be.
Any could in theory.
Yeah, anyone. Yeah, you're right.
Even if it didn't have a hardware UART, you could bit bang the thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, yeah. True. Yeah. But this has a ROM, so it's already there, right? I mean, that's the idea.
Okay.
I don't know why, because you're right. It's the CP2102 GMR on DigiKey, single quantity, 506. It's an old one. Okay, that's why. That's bonkers.
That just seems nuts. I don't know why anyone would.
USB 2.0.
Yeah.
Not recommended for new designs. You can get 40,000 of them, so, you know.
Okay.
So that's a balance point there. Weird times we're living in, Dave. Weird times.
I'm having a hard time actually searching for this on LCSC. So
search for CH340.
CH
is, I forget the name of the chip maker, but they're coming out with crazy-ass parts. We've talked about them on the show before.
They're in USB IC.
I remember first hearing about them, I think the 330, but that's like low-cost USB to serial.
Mm. 48 cents, 122,000 in stock. One-off price, 48 cents. CH340.
So what we're saying here is parts in China are sometimes lower cost than in the US. Is that the conclusion we've come to?
Da, da, da.
I know, right? Oh my God.
Seriously.
We've cracked it, Dave.
And there's another brand. So this is a WCH Jiangqing Heng brand. Oh no, they're all WCH. Okay, so that's who the company is. Yeah. If you want quantity, 31 cents in 1,000 off quantity. That's what I'm talking about. Right? So there you go. They've got no shortage. They've got hundreds of thousands in stock.
How did we start talking about this again?
I have no idea.
We were saying
doesn't matter.
I was saying you could turn the ESP32 into this.
Hmm.
That is correct. I think what it really comes down to is you could have it do other things then too. And you might also have another one on the board, right? You've talked about design downs, right? So you might up your volume and that sort of thing.
Yep.
So say you were actually using an ESP32 on another part of your board, you could do that sort of thing too.
Hmm. Okay.
I'm actually not sure.
I would say good luck using this. I hope there's an English data sheet because the Chinese data sheet is not easy to read.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. Boy. What is it like? They've got the C variant, the N variant, the G variant, the T variant, the N variant, the E variant, the B variant, the S variant, the K variant. What? They must be different packages, are they? Jesus.
Yeah, there's... I know a lot of the parts come in SOIC-16. That's how I often see them.
Yeah, that is the most common. Yeah, but anyway, there's like 200,000 in... like 400,000 in stock if you count all the different variants. Yeah.
Mm.
So there you go.
Yeah. I'm going to LCSC more often than I used to. I'll tell you that much.
Yep.
For better or worse.
Yeah, they're one of those things that we almost couldn't do without now, aren't they? You know, it's one of those...
I mean, it's just
one of those things. Once it's there and you go, oh, gee, you know, and it becomes like a go-to place. It's like I've been using it in heaps of videos and stuff like that. I'll go anywhere that uses parts at this point. Yeah, you know? Right.
This is like any port in a storm, yep. And this is a port. Right. So.
Yep. Yeah, but they're great. So anyway, no shortage there. So I'm not sure where you're getting those bullshit few dollar prices from DigiKey or whatever. That's just yeah.
Well, that's where I was calling out a specific part that's always been more expensive.
Oh, okay.
And then we were talking about a Chinese part that was made as an alternative to this always more expensive part. So
right.
I think that's why. Yeah.
Got it.
There are other parts that you could also use that are cheaper. I'm just saying the ones that I'm using often. Mm. Now, like the, what's the common one? What's the Scottish company that makes USB serial converters? Not Scottish? JTAG. Yeah, they're Scottish. What is on all of the Arduino boards? FTDI.
Oh, FTDI. I didn't know they were Scottish. Okay.
I'm pretty sure they are. Yes.
The famous FTDI debacle. So,
yeah, I think that's when I learned about that they were Scottish. Right. Okay. Because I remember we were talking about it because they bricked a bunch of chips. And And I was like, oh, Scotland. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Corporate profile.
Didn't remember that at all. Anyway. Talking about Glasgow. Failed companies.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Can we end with the success and failure at Pebble? Jeez, I thought Pebble failed years ago, but this seems to be a new article.
They did.
I thought
this is Eric Minkowski, the founder.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Eric moved. He's at YC, I believe now, Y Combinator. And so he like advises a bunch of companies.
Right.
And then basically this is, you know, he wrote this kind of mea culpa.
Yep.
Not really mea culpa. It was just a, you know, kind of a retrospective, I suppose. And he said he never published it, though. And for some reason, he said never published it, dusted off for the 10-year anniversary of Pebble's launch. I think secretly, he's also talking about his new project.
Oh,
that's
okay.
That's really at the bottom, you know.
Yep.
But hey, I'll take some dirt on the old stuff and, you know, take a little ad at the bottom in exchange. And, you know, Eric works on cool things, so who cares?
Anyway, I've done 3 videos on the Pebble. This was way back. This is 6 years ago, 760. Yeah. And I did a teardown. I did a unboxing and a review and a torture test where I took it through an obstacle race just to see if it would survive the obstacle race.
Wait, you said you never wear smartwatches, liar.
Oh, it was all the fad. You know, I was going after the views at the time. You know. Yeah, no, I'd never actually used it. I just,
You're wearing one right now, aren't you? Tell the truth.
No, look.
Tell the truth,
sir. I will post a photo on Twitter of what I am.
You can't handle the watch.
There is not a single smartwatch in this entire lab that actually operates. No, I did. Yeah, there's a couple that I have because people have sent them in or whatever. I actually won once. I've actually got a YouTube smartwatch. It's actually YouTube branded. So I actually won that at a YouTube conference once.
Interesting.
So I've got a Casio Eco Drive analog with hands and everything.
Oh, solar powered. Do you wear watches?
Sorry.
I actually don't wear a watch.
Not Casio. Citizen Eco Drive. Citizen. Jobby.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Sure.
Sure. I'll post a photo.
Okay. Dave has very fancy watches. That's what he wants people to know here.
It's not fancy. It's just a nice solar powered analog watch. It's really nice. Nice small diameter for small wrists. It's really thin.
You know, you're saying it's not fancy, but you're talking like someone who has fancy watches.
Well, I am a bit of a watch aficionado.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That also a thing that people that have fancy watches say.
No. I refuse to wear any watch that doesn't get me at least multiple years battery life. That's what I'm saying.
Got it. Right. Not a smartwatch. That's it,
no, exactly. Not a smartwatch. Well, I've got calculator watches, right? That are, you know, but yeah. I even designed and sold my own calculator watch at one point.
I've heard about this.
Yes, the micro watch.
Amp Hour, I think. Yeah, I think Amp Hour. We've talked about it.
Yep. I used to sell it. It was very popular. You could play chess on it. You could play chess. On this smart watch in quote marks, on this calculator watch.
So speaking of people who start selling things at the end of an article or a show. so what do you think of this article? What did you think of Pebble?
Pebble, it was like meh. It's like I didn't really get it, I think. Like, you know, no, I just don't like the smartwatch thing.
I think the thing that's interesting rereading this
anyway,
now, you know, like,
I haven't read the article, sorry. So I didn't know about this story.
I mean, there's a TLDR at the top, so that's probably enough, right? The interesting thing to me is I'm reading this article and I'm like, that must have been like 2008 or something like that. And no, it was 2014, 2015, you know, which to be fair was still 7 years ago. But like just thinking about the ubiquity of, you know, Apple watches and Samsung watches and all these other things where like it wasn't even a category 7 years ago. And this was, you know, relatively one of the first, if not the most successful of the first. And it's just like, and then they folded, you know, so that's what this article is about.
They basically had a cash crunch, which was one of their problems. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he, you know, further down, he kind of talks about some of the technical stuff. He talks about his CTO, Andrew, who we've had on the show before. If people don't remember that. So I will link that in. And Andrew talked about some of the technical challenges at the time.
And and they also, their quest for huge growth, whereas, you know, they started out as the geeky hacker user base and they,
trying to pivot to whatever
this huge growth model because they got investors in or whatever. I'm sure they got investors in. Yeah, I think they did. Yeah, they got huge investment in. And you have to show huge growth, right?
That's right.
And that just killed them. It's just, yeah, no. Yep. Oopsie.
I can't tell what year. There's no comment section on this episode of The Amp Hour. I'm not sure if I turned it off or if our site's failing. Probably the site, probably the latter right now. But there's no comment page, and that's how I tell what year it was. But it was episode 175. That sounds pretty old.
It's pretty old.
Say.
Yep.
Yeah. This is so weird. Is this because it's a tag? What is going on here? Dave, how does our website work?
I don't know. You're the one in charge of the website.
Yeah, I know. WordPress.
Yeah, I was actually looking at this the other day and I went, yeah, our we need to update our WordPress thing because it does not put the published date on it. I was just thinking like, or weeks ago, last month or something, that, yeah, there is
well,
no, like, I was looking
show,
for a date.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking for a date and it's not, I think we need to, there must be like a show date option, show published date option in WordPress somewhere.
I think there surely is. Yeah, I could probably put that in the design or something.
I think we need to update that because that's valuable.
Yeah, it is valuable. And I think, like I said, usually I look at the comment section, but then like if there's no comments.
If there's no
comments.
This is
why people should comment so that I can.
Yeah, right. So that Chris can, and we can both know.
Oh, you know what? That's what it was. That's why. So we close comments after a certain amount of time to get rid of the spammers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
And so if no one commented on it, it's then closed, and so it doesn't look like anything's there.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we do enable comments again now, so you can actually comment.
That's right. Yeah.
And we haven't been spammed. So.
Oh, sure we have. Just not.
Have we?
Not much.
Oh, okay. Right. I haven't seen any. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Last thing. Did you like my art on the two episodes ago? I didn't get a chance to ask you about it, but I was very proud of it.
Which one? The Star Wars one or?
The Star Wars one. Yeah.
Yeah. I did like it. I commented on. Believe I commented on Twitter about it.
I think you did. Yeah.
Can I scan your badge?
These days.
Do you want one of our PCB rulers? Yeah. What is your estimated yearly volume? Says Princess Leia. Yeah. I would tell Princess Leia anything.
Yeah, 100 million, Leia. Yeah. 100 million. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yep. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
I guess that's an hour, you know.
Yeah,
it's been good. We've been literally all over the place with this show, but it's, you know, it's good old fashioned amp hour right here.
Yep.
I'll try and add dates to future posts.
And you'll watch Bluey and get back to us. And you'll
report Bluey
on the next show.
I mean, it's 9:44 here, which means 9:44 p.m. That means I probably have at least 10 hours to go watch that before I have to start work tomorrow.
Totally.
So, yeah. Yep. Bring it on.
Got heaps of time.
Well, I'm gonna go brew some coffee.
You do know that each episode's only like 7 minutes long.
I'm sure there's like 1,000 of them, though. So.
Well, there's, I don't know. It's probably
here
50
I go.
Now. I don't know.
Bluey fan of the future.
Yep. Bluey's awesome.
Talk to you soon.
Catch you next time.